Welcome back to Pax Europiana, the debate about peace in Europe. And we are now in this section number 5. This is about regional integration systems and about the 10 permanent members of the United Nations Security Council once this is reformed. Because now I will talk about India, and it's, I think, a very the best possible example how this post-World War II order is not really the best one for the second phase of globalization from 2020 to 2050 and has to be adopted. The case of India is striking. India, when the United Nations was created in the, prepared in 44 and 45 in San Francisco, the great conferences, amazing progress, but India was at this time still part of the British Empire. It just became independent in 47. China was an ally of the West and of the Allies and got this seat. And then even later, the Communist Republic in 71 could take this seat. So China is today the same size in population like India, but India doesn't have a seat in the Security Council just because it was born or got independent 2 years later. Obviously, when you look at the history of the Second World War, the Indian troops have played a big, big role on many fronts of they were fighting for the British Empire and for freedom and for success of the Allies. But because they got independent only 2 years later, and they are not in the Security Council still today in the 2020s. I mean, we are talking about the 2020s. That's all 70, 75 years ago. And this is, I think, a little bit questionable, or to say very least. And it is also not good politics, because it's 1.4 billion who are not on a permanent basis in the Security Council. And I think it is also very necessary to get this done. It is also because a lot of people, and they don't agree with me, they see communist China's rise as a very big problem. I think it's basically an opportunity, because with the change in prosperity, there will be also a change of governance. It just takes a long time, obviously. And nevertheless, obviously, this is China is a communist country. But you know, the best way to balance out the rise of China is, of course, to include also India, because we have this situation. There is a similar sized power, India, very close to China. Even if they not neutralize each other in this kind of power projection, I don't know who else. Yeah? So it's certainly for us to work closer to for the West now, strategically, tactically, it's very good to work with India and to make sure that India has the same global position like China. I understand economically, obviously, China is more successful, but India understands that as well. They are reforming and doing a lot. And basically, they have overtaken the United Kingdom now in prosperity and GDP output. They have also close to 3 trillion GDP, and China has 14, true. But let's see what the next 20 years will bring. And under decent economic market condition, India will be very successful as well and will reach as well Chinese levels of prosperity. I'm confident, maybe even overtake it. So that's, I think, very important. First of all, India to get a UN security seat permanently, one of the 10 seats. And that's, I think, very important also to show our appreciation and our inclusion and the openness of the system for Asia and the Indians, obviously, very important part of Asia. So let me say some other things. It's obviously also very kind if India doesn't cozy up too much with Russia and China. So please, India, don't conclude a free trade agreement with the Eurasian Economic Union. That's a hostile organization of the West. Yeah? Conclude a free trade agreement with the European Union, with the United Kingdom. Now, very soon, the British Prime Minister will come to India in the end of January. It's very 2021, so it's a very good moment to obviously kickstart a trade agreement with the United Kingdom. Anyhow, you were in the same trading system, not only until independence, but until 1966. Then came the big devaluation when India left the economic system, the sterling system. So basically, it makes a lot of sense to do a free trade agreement between the United Kingdom and the and India. And obviously, in this framework, it's also quite logically to do one with the EU, because we are not so different to the UK. We have the same trading system up to now. Maybe there will be some divergent. Maybe the UK can offer some better deal. But test us out in EU. We are also ready for that, and that would be very good. It would be very nice if India also leaves BRICS, this kind of Russian-inspired emerging networks. That is really very negative, hostile organization to the West, and join the OECD. That would be very good. And under OECD, market democracy, India is the biggest democracy and the emerging market, is really very logically in the OECD. You will also have all the support in the governance sector to be a real working market economy. And that would be hugely beneficial for the Indian consumers, SMEs, and for everybody who does business with India. So be a stakeholder in OECD. And once you are there, India should be then also on the big table in the new G7, which I call G11, where obviously Mexico, South Korea, Australia, and India and Indonesia should also sit. And also a bit less Europeans, because we are always taking a lot of places. So no Italy, no France, no Germany, but only the EU itself. So we are G11, and that makes a lot of sense. And so we are good on that one. Welcome, India. So that's for the free trade and for OECD. Also, India, please. It's very important that India, also as a superpower emerging, is joining in the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe. It's Eurasia, actually. We also have Central Asia already there. It's very important that the countries of Central Asia, but also in that case Pakistan, Afghanistan, but India definitely, and also China, also Japan, join in the OECD, and we can so replace the Shanghai Cooperation Agreement. Because with all respect, you know, it's not necessary to have Chinese-inspired organizations in the world when we have European-inspired organizations which work according to our values and systems, and they work quite well. And just we have not been open enough. So India, please join as well the OECD in Vienna. So that's, I think, institutionally for the UN, for the OECD, for the OECD. It's always a bit difficult with my pronunciation to make the difference, but I want to repeat, the Union of Market Democracy based in Paris, and here the India to join, and also the Union, the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe based in Vienna. Both India should join as a full member, and also conclude a free trade agreement with the European Union. That's very important. And the EU to close a partnership with India. As part of this partnership is very clear, mutually agreed, that the EU should get the French seat, basically, of the, in the Security Council, and India get a permanent seat in the UN Security Council. That's very important. We should also do infrastructure interconnectivity program, similar like the Belt and Road Initiative. It's also anyhow the same region, so it's a complementary. And this kind of India-EU infrastructure dialogue via Afghanistan and Pakistan and also Turkmenistan and the Caspian Sea to bypass the hostile powers, Russia and Iran. They are two hostile states. We have to bypass them via some infrastructure link, either now obviously with a ferry, it already exists over the Caspian, but later also maybe with a physical connection over or under the Caspian Sea, in order to really have much better interconnectivity with India, not only by sea, but also on land corridors, which are also useful in a later stage to connect with China. But there will be also development of Central Asia, of the Caucasus, of Turkey. So that's all very, very good. But definitely this kind of official dialogue, also as a balance against the situation that China seems to have in the minds and the hearts of the people, some kind of monopoly on infrastructure development in Central Asia and in the area between Europe and China. And that should not be the case. Yeah. So that's really a very important priority for the European Union, for the UK and for the United States to have this better partnership with India according to this direction. Obviously, India can also learn a lot from the European Union because I'm also, in a sense, for a free federal India. India is very typical situation of a state union, already very advanced, united. But I'm sure there is many things to be reformed. Now there is this agriculture sector reform, maybe something to learn from Europe, or many other issues institutionally, in a strategic partnership between EU and India. Many of these things can be addressed. We are also 450 million and we will have 60 or 70 million more with Ukraine and with the Balkans. So we are not as big as India. India is 1.4 billion, but we at least represent in the European Union about 500,000 people with the future members as well. And so it's a significant trading area, and altogether in free Europe, UK is also now associated with this agreement. So we have the UK and Turkey and Ukraine and the EFTA. So it's 700 million. We are a significant partner as well for India. About half the size live in free Europe. And we are, I think, totally happy to have a very close strategic partnership with India as an emerging market and as the biggest in population democracy of the world. And I hope that this partnership and this institutional cooperation with India will lead to a lot of benefits for Indian and for European consumers in the this decade. And we should be ambitious. What is the timeline? Obviously, the FTA can be done before the European Parliament elections in 2024. That should be also the timeline where it is ratified already. The UN seat, I'm less optimistic how much we will be able to change the Chinese and the Russian, especially the Russian monopoly on decision-making via this nefarious veto in the UN. But at least we should do it very clearly that the EU is basically starting to transfer the French seat to the EU. And that is already the starting signal for changing of times, that the really regional systems will be taken more serious by the UN and will have a stronger role, and that the UN Security Council is due to be reformed and the decision-making power in that one is also due to be reformed. And in a short nutshell, this is my proposals for India. I hope that we will be having a very strong strategic partnership, be successful together. India as part of the free world and not a part of this kind of socialist, kind of block-free world and all this grandstanding of the 70s, the Soviet friendship and so. If you choose that direction, that would be nefarious for your own future and also for everybody in the world. Please join the free world. This is the offer in the UN that will take some time, but immediately with the free trade agreement, with the membership in OECD and OECD, with the cooperation in all fields of governance together, especially in OECD, and also to have a much stronger role in world affairs for India as an important part of the world and as a key pillar for the free world in the coming decades. And that, I think, is a powerful reality. It will be, actually. It's not a vision for some long-distance future. This can be done now in the 2020s, and this is what I call for, and also for India to take a stronger role in with other regions in the world, and also to follow the same strategic vision to build a partnership with the EU, with the Commonwealth, with African Union, with ASEAN Plus. I will outline all these concepts in this podcast. But also India, to similar like the EU, to really actively do this partnership agenda and support regional integration, make peace with the neighbors, de-escalate the situation with Pakistan, with Bangladesh, and also to actively support ASEAN regional integration as in a partnership with that neighbors to India's east, and somehow to really contribute to global peace and security and to democracy and prosperity in India. as part of the free world. That's my wish and my vision for India. Thanks a lot for your attention.